From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from Richmond in East Bay.
Sorry, Hill Spinall.
Dolores at Market Street.
Daly City.
Outer Sunset.
Castro and Church.
Edge of the Mission.
Yorktown. Antioch.
Nopa, San Francisco.
Coming up, we'll see how the Trump administration is already changing the Bay Area.
And the way it was phrased now, it was kind of like one of those Bay Area ballot measures that may or may not make a difference, like the San Francisco Board of Supervisors denounced the war in Iraq.
We'll hear from local protesters and high schoolers who traveled to the Women's March on Washington.
Welcome to your first day.
We will not go away. Welcome to your first day.
And we'll see it all through the eyes of San Francisco's top Republican.
He has a lot to do, I think, to convince the rest of America that he's going to be their president, too.
The new world begins to take shape today on Cross Currents. So here we are, the first Monday of the Trump presidency. Right away, we've seen some significant decisions that will impact lives here in the Bay Area. To talk about some of what we've seen, I'm joined by KALW's news director, Ben Trefney. Okay, Ben, so what's changed since last week?
Well, one of President Trump's very first official acts was to sign an executive order stating it's the policy of his administration to repeal the Affordable Care Act. And the way it was phrased now, it was kind of like one of those Bay Area ballot measures that may or may not make a difference, like the San Francisco Board of Supervisors denounced the war in Iraq. In other words, it's not officially putting anything definitive into effect, but Congress is already responding to it, and opponents of the ACA are looking for ways to cut costs.
So what is the timeline for a repeal of Obamacare?
Well, considering Trump's populist message in his inaugural address, it would appear hypocritical to eliminate health coverage for 20 million Americans without viable replacement options. And by the way, that's almost 4 million Californians who have gained coverage under the ACA. It's called Covered California here. And to make it more palatable, Republicans and Trump have been talking about a replacement plan, but there's nothing definitive yet. And meanwhile, the deadline for people to enroll in Covered California or Medi-Cal is the end of this month. So that's January 31st.
Okay, well, we'll put that information up at klw.org for folks. And I know today the president signed another executive order, this one withdrawing from the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement, the TPP. So how's that going to affect California?
I did some research with the U.S. Department of Commerce for that, and this is going to have a big effect. Mm. California exports almost $70 billion in goods every year to TPP countries. So those include Mexico and Canada and Japan, not China. It imports more than twice that. It imports over $150 billion of goods, by the way. So the concern is that without a trade agreement in place, exports could drop, and that would impact lots of industries. Shipping and trucking, obviously, tech, agriculture. And in fact, California's farmers export about two-fifths of their product altogether. That's worth more than $20 billion a year.
Wow.
Now, keep in mind, this is not necessarily an issue pitting Republicans versus Democrats. Even though former President Obama supported the TPP, Hillary Clinton had spoken out against it.
Right.
So this was likely to happen no matter who held the top office. Mm. And today, President Trump also met with union leaders to talk about renegotiating the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA. But there hasn't been any action on that yet.
Wow. Okay. And also, I know that today, President Trump banned foreign aid for health groups who offer abortion counseling. That's a typical Republican presidential policy.
Mm-hmm.
And he also froze hiring for federal workers.
Yes. And though there are exemptions on that for hires by the military or in national security and public safety sectors. So as you could imagine, this could also have a big impact on California jobs. The state has 245,000 federal workers. In San Francisco County alone, there's more than 14,000 as of last June. But there's only 44 job openings, which are now, presumably as of today, closed.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Ben.
Sure.
That's KALW News Director Ben Trefney. And that brings us to the weekend that was. On Saturday, officials in Washington, D.C. estimate 500,000 people took part in the Women's March. Among those who traveled to the nation's capital for the event were 16 high school students from the San Francisco Unified School District. We worked with three of them to record their experiences. And here's some of what they had to share.
The amount of people here is crazy. We're all here to fight for our rights.
This is what democracy looks like.
Real quick, I just have to give credit to these amazing posters that say things like, why is there always money for war but not for education?
Black lives matter! Black lives matter! Black lives matter!
Everyone is feeling proud to be here. I know I am, and I am happy to be part of history.
Love, not hate. That's what makes America great.
We're on our way to the White House. We're chanting, we're marching. It's beautiful to see everybody following everybody's marches and laughing at posters.
Welcome to your first day.
We will not go away. Welcome to your first day. We will not go away.
Those were the voices of Brianna Boteo from Mission High School, Aglo Lungavi'i from Burton High School, and Mariana Baines from June Jordan School for Equity. That piece was produced by KALW's Hannah Kingsley Ma, who took part in the Oakland Women's March on Saturday. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Julie Kane, in for Hanat Baba. Here in the Bay Area, almost 200,000 demonstrators flooded the streets of San Jose, Oakland, and San Francisco, along with many other cities on Saturday. Here are some of their voices.
My name is Arnold Fitzpatrick. I'm from Oakley, California. I think this is great. This is wonderful. This is probably about the greatest thing that's happened to us since 1969, when there was the anti-war demonstrations going on. This is for justice, freedom, and peace for every human being.
I'm Alanya Snyder from Oakland. One reason I'm here is to keep reminding us all of the white people and privileged people to take direction from people of color who have been aware of these kinds of oppressions for a long time, and we need to work together and listen to their leadership.
Go away! Racist, sexist, anti-gay!
It feels great. It feels great that so many people are together. I'm Brenda Chapman, and I'm from Santa Rosa. I am a woman. I'm a black woman. And I don't know, it's just a scary time for me. I have friends that are undocumented, and I know that racism has always existed, but now I feel like the hate is just out there in the open for everyone to see. And I think if we all stand together, we could hopefully make the next 4 years not as scary as they seem.
Rise up with the women of the world! Rise up!
My name is Samantha Zarate, and I live in Menlo Park. I'm holding a sign that says, a woman's place is in the resistance. Because I love Star Wars, I love being a woman, and I'm really excited to be here today. I think what's next is people resisting the normalization of what Trump is saying and what the administration is saying, and doing our best through protests, voting in local elections, participating in our local government, donating to Planned Parenthood. I've already set up a monthly donation to Planned Parenthood.
Fight like a girl!
Fight like a girl!
My name is Miles Simon, spelled M-I-L-E-S space S-I-M-O-N. I am 6 years old, and my sign says, join the green side because you want to take care of the earth. And it has a picture of Darth Vader because I really like Star Wars.
Fight like a girl! Human rights are worth the fight! Fight like a girl!
My name's Angie Berrigan. I live in Santa Clara, California.
I'm your brother. I'm Dominic Berrigan. I reside in South San Francisco.
I've got a sign that says, pussy power. And the back of it says, you can't comb over racism.
And I'm holding the American flag today. Well, we think they both go together. This combination of our rights and the flag, this is patriotism.
I have never been so shaken by an election. It scares me to know that my rights as a woman can be taken away. Having somebody else make the choice so what I can do with my body is unfathomable. It is my first protest, actually. I've never really put a whole lot of energy into fighting for something like this. And I told myself, it can't be just about coming here today. I promised that to myself.
Those were the voices of people at the Oakland and San Francisco Women's Marches that took place on Saturday, the day after Donald Trump's inauguration. It was produced by KALW's Lisa Morehouse and Andrew Stelzer. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Julie Kane, in for Hanat Bava. While protests around the Bay Area and your own social media feed could make it seem like almost no one supports the new president, that's hardly the case. Jason Clark is chairman of the San Francisco Republican Party. I sat down with him today and started by asking about the women's marches.
Well, it's quite an exciting event, and it's nice to see a lot of people exercising their First Amendment right and doing it in a peaceful, largely peaceful, mostly respectful manner. The last presidential election, certainly, a lot of people felt very passionate about a number of issues. This is kind of an expression that people still say that they're going to advocate for some issues, even though that they may feel that they have lost the election.
I'm interested to ask you a little bit more about that, because I know you didn't support Donald Trump as the nominee for president. And I'm just curious if that's changed now that he's actually in office.
Well, when he became the official nominee, as an official of the Republican Party here in San Francisco, we supported him. So I'll make that clear. Now that he is president, because he's our president, whether we like it or not, like many people, I am definitely looking forward to some positive changes and keeping an open mind about everything. I think it's important that we extend that. I certainly, as a private citizen, I did that for Barack Obama when he first took office. So I'll keep an open mind.
And I'm just curious, I know that you're the first openly gay chairman of the San Francisco Republican Party. And I'm just curious, you know, one of the things that happened over the past couple of days is LGBT rights, any mention of that is down from the whitehouse.gov website. I'm just curious what's your reaction is to that?
Well, if you look, everything is down from Barack Obama's White House page. In fact, nothing was deleted. It was just archived and moved to the National Archives. When Obama took office in 2008, he erased George W. Bush's website, and so those pages about veterans affairs and the economy disappeared. Nobody accused Barack Obama of hating veterans or hating the economy. It's the same thing here. Donald Trump is building a new website, and so pages on issues like that will reappear. Some of the stuff will come back. And what's really exciting for me as a member of the LGBT community is that this is the first president in history who has started day one in the White House saying, "I support marriage equality." This is the first candidate of a major party in history who said from day one, "I support, you know, gay rights. I support things like gay marriage. I support the transgender bathroom issue. I support domestic partnerships." And that's something that it's a long time in coming. And, you know, that's something that we should definitely be proud of.
I'm curious about Mike Pence, because his views have been quite different. And he has said a lot of things that are in opposition to same-sex marriage. And so I'm just curious what your views are on the vice president.
The vice president is definitely going to have his views evolve quite a bit. The important thing to remember, though, is that Donald Trump is president. Mike Pence is vice president, just like Joe Biden was vice president. Ultimately, in this case, Donald Trump will be the president. And I think you're going to see a softening of some of the stances on this. Mike Pence's primary concern is to really stimulate the economy, and definitely this administration doesn't do something to help the economy in those Rust Belt states, they won't be able to count on a second term.
And when you say that you feel like Mike Pence, you know, will soften his views or that he needs to evolve, how do you see that happening or why do you feel like that's going to happen?
I think exposure to this administration. I mean, Donald Trump is he's a Manhattan Republican. He has had gay people work for him his entire life. He was extended same-sex domestic partnership benefits to same-sex couples for his companies years and years ago. And I think, you know, having exposure to that and having exposure to Donald Trump's sort of worldview like that, I think that's going to help him evolve a bit.
I want to shift the conversation just a little bit because one thing I'm really curious about, you know, I'm thinking about what is it like to be a Republican in San Francisco?
You know, I think it's a lot of fun, and all of my friends know I'm Republican. If you excuse the term, I've come out to them as a Republican, and that means I can be a bit of a rabble-rouser, which can be fun in and of itself. But for me, the idea of being able to talk about issues, being able to talk to people and tell them, you know, there's a different way to do things. I think it's important in democracy.
That was Jason Clark, chairman of the San Francisco Republican Party. All right, so we've been around the Bay and the nation today to get some perspective on how people are responding to the new administration. Now we'd like to share with you some global thoughts. Our news department has a visiting journalist this year, Jürgen Klemm, who's a professional broadcaster from Estonia. His nation borders Russia. In fact, Estonia was part of the Soviet Union until 1991. Jürgen has seen allegations of Russian involvement in the U.S. election, and he heard President Trump's statements about NATO. We can learn a lot from Jürgen, so we're debuting a new segment today. It's called Ask an Estonian.
Estonia is a small country in a northeastern part of Europe. So actually, we're not that far away from the States because there's only one country in between, that's Russia. Well, it has been a complicated history for the hobbit neighboring the giant. At one point, Estonia was a part of the Russian Empire. We gained our independence after the First World War. Then we lost it after the Second World War, as we did lose a lot of people to the war. And the Soviet repressions and mass deportations. Then came the Cold War and we regained our independence in the 90s. But lately it feels again as if the eastern neighbor is trying to jump the fence again. And I'm not talking about the Russian people. They must be one of the nicest people and it's one of the richest and most sophisticated cultures. But it's the state, the Russian state, the Vladimir Putin regime. Well, even the fact that there is quite a big Russian community here in San Francisco and not an American community in, say, St. Petersburg, I believe this illustrates the fact that this state, the Russian state, may be unpleasant even for its own people. When I was in Europe for the holidays, of course the media and the people, they did talk about the Trump campaign and the presidential elections and the scandals and the possible connections between Trump's team and Putin's regime. But the most important question, I would say, for people in Eastern Europe, it isn't a Brexit or Trump or the German or the French elections. It's the question maybe that even people don't have the guts to speak out loud is, would we be able to stand alone on our own? There's a lot of disappointment in Eastern Europe. Take, for example, Ukraine and Crimea, the annexation of Crimea. Ukraine, they gave away their nuclear arsenal after the Cold War, and in exchange they were guaranteed their independence and territorial integrity. And now, a few years ago, they were left on their own. What has changed for me as an Estonian? Well, when the Baltic states and Estonia were accepted to the NATO alliance, that was in 2004, I thought that this question is off the table, that we are a part of the Western democratic civilization as we want it to be. But now, after 6 months looking at it from a distance, from San Francisco, I've come to realize that maybe we are the only ones who see it this way, that it seems to be that the Baltic states, it's still a gray area.
That was KALW's Jürgen Klemm. And finally, bringing it back home, some of the Bay Area's most celebrated writers met up at the San Francisco Main Library last week to share their ideas on the state of the world. It was a Litquake event called No Shadow Without Light, Writers Respond to Trump. This week, we're going to listen in on that evening, beginning right now with novelist Sarah Ladipo Manyika and her piece, January's People.
On election day, I flew out of San Francisco to London. The last time I'd done this was on the eve of Brexit. And as with that flight, many passengers were nervously checking mobile devices before takeoff. We were informed that the pilot had decided not to announce election results for fear of a mid-flight eruption. But for those who cared to check, there would be intermittent internet access. One passenger took this as his cue to preemptively declare a winner. And as if further proof were needed of his Trump allegiance, he proceeded to make crude passes at the flight attendant. Hours later, when he let out a celebratory yelp and pumped the air with his fists, we all knew who had won. "You're in my country now," a British woman snapped at him as we landed. "I don't give a f-," he laughed. "I can do what I want." "When you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything," I recalled Donald Trump's lines from the infamous Access Hollywood tape. As we disembarked, I scrolled through text messages from friends expressing shock, disbelief, and two pleas. One, "Sarah, please don't fly on an election day again." And the second, "May God have mercy on us." I'd been worried for months that the American election would go the way that it did. I'd accompanied my husband to a meeting of business leaders in Rome. And it was in this context that we were granted an audience with the Pope. I listened to the Pope's words, to the way he was holding the CEOs accountable, and I felt relieved. He said, in Italian, "Involve in your efforts those whom you seek to help. Give them voice. Listen to their stories. Learn from their experiences and understand their needs. See in them a brother and a sister and a son and a daughter, a mother and a father. Amid the challenges of our day, see the human face of those you earnestly seek to help." The Pope's humility and his emphasis on human dignity touched me. And yet, as I dwelt on his words, it struck me that what I heard might be similar to what others heard in the lines of Trump's victory speech. "Every single American will have the opportunity to realize his or her fullest potential. The forgotten men and women of our country will be forgotten no longer." As humans, we need hope. We also need leaders. In Pope Francis, I saw a man whose life reflects the ideals he espouses and whose integrity and humility are befitting of a leader. I returned to America with a little less despair and a flicker of hope, knowing that there are some world leaders who walk their talk and whose message is not driven by political expediency or a hunger for power. my flight back coincided with another election. But this time, when I landed, Austria's far-right presidential candidate had lost. And snap.
That's Sarah Ladipo-Manica reading from her essay, January's People. She performed the work last week at Litquake's event, No Shadow Without Light, Writers Respond to Trump. It was recorded by KALW's Holly J. McDeed. Tune in to Cross Currents later this week to hear the thoughts of another Bay Area writer as we enter this new political era. And that's it for today's Cross Currents. Our production team includes Leela Day, Olivia Henry, Angela Johnston, James Rowland, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, Kuvalroop Singh, and Bowen Wang. The show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Line producer was Liza Veal. Jen Chien is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Today's local music is by Xiomara. The Berkeley native samples a lot of styles in her latest album, hip-hop, soul, and gospel among them. Xiomara is on the bill with other local bands tomorrow at the Rickshaw Stop in San Francisco. Doors open at 7:30 for an evening of free music. For Cross Currents, I'm Julie Kane. A couple dollars to sustain my